Welcome to the Dope CFO Podcast, where you can find the best information for accountants and bookkeepers that want to start and grow a highly profitable and flexible remote cannabis accounting firm. With your host, Andrew Hunziker. Now that's dope.
Hey everybody, this is Andrew Hunziker, CPA, also CFO, founder of Dope CFO as well. About my background, I've been a CPA for over 25 years, was at a big four, including PricewaterhouseCoopers. I won the gold medal award for the highest score in the CPA exam, as well as was runner up for the Portland, Oregon Business Journal CFO of Year Award in 2017. And I was the first ever cannabis CFO to be nominated. Done lots of startup work as well. And love teaching all of our community. We have now over 500 people in all 50 states in our Dope CFO program. Hey, everybody. Andrew here. Super excited for our podcast today. This one's not going to be our normal accounting or cannabis. We're going to dive into to a little deeper wellness, and very, very excited to have Lauren Baptiste here. She was... is now the founder and CEO of Akaloa Wellness, which is a life coach and wellness company. But before that, she had a very successful 13-year career as a top performer in Big Four accounting. She was also nominated as a rising star in her industry. However, that drive eventually landed her in the emergency room from workplace burnout, which I think many of us can resonate with, whether we've been to the ER or not. And so I'm just going to jump in and turn it over to Lauren. We want to hear as much about your story and kind of your background as far back as you want to start. And then we'll kind of dive into your story and then we'll lead into more questions from there.
Amazing. Thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be here. So my story, I know there's so many places to start, but I think one thing that I like to, as I'm starting off, focusing on the work that I do, I had a workplace burnout. And so as Andrew mentioned, I ended up in the emergency room. And I noticed there was a moment, like that burnout, there was a life before that, like a BB before burnout, and there's a life after burnout, AB. So I was thinking about that today as I was, you know, focusing on what we were going to talk about. And so the burnout itself, you know, I could talk about that, which was, you know, I was working really hard. Which to me, I was traveling across the country every week. I was working with a challenging team. I had just transferred from one team to another. So that was a whole adjustment. But for me, what the real tipping point was, I was willing to push myself and do whatever it took to be successful. I never questioned deadlines or asked, when is this due? I used to just assume everything was a fire drill. And I expected others to look out for me. And I was quickly disillusioned by that wasn't really the case. That doesn't happen. You have to look out for yourself. And so those three things pushed me to the place where I ended up in an emergency room. So yes, I had a tough team. Yes, I was working long hours. Yes, I was traveling across the country. But it was more about the things about me that I was allowing to happen, which then just like led me to that emergency room that day in 2013, 11 years ago.
So on that piece, just even almost is almost setting boundaries with yourself. And I wonder if it's more, because when I go back to when I was at Pricewaterhouse, I think my first year was 1996. And I've actually teased some of these audit partners that I work with now at these national firms. I was like, when I got hired, nobody asked me, hey, Andrew, do you mind working 100 hours a week and traveling all over the place and zero life balance? It was just like a given. Now, I think in today's world, the kids come out of college and they're like, you know, it's not going to be that way.
I don't want to do that. Like they just say that. We didn't say that.
So maybe they already have a little bit of those boundaries, but it was that kind of what it was of just, but do you think it was even possible for you or me back then, where they've just said, well, go find a new job. If you had said, I need more time or whatever.
I think what I realized was it wasn't necessarily like if I said, I don't want to do that, that's just not who I was. That's not who I am anyway. That's not my personality. But I think what I assumed was if I got an email at 6:30 at night, I assumed it had to be ready the next morning. I assumed they sent it to me after hours because they were expecting an immediate turnaround. So when I went from BB to AB, what I realized in that after burnout is to start lovingly pushing back on the emails that come to me and asking, when is this needed? Can I do it during business hours? And that became a differentiator. It's a healthy boundary versus sometimes when we talk about boundaries, I think people are like, there's almost an extreme. Like I see this on like Instagram or sometimes the social medias where like the boundaries are just, I won't do this. And that's not really realistic. I think we just need to be able to communicate. And when we can properly communicate what works for me and what you need, then we can find that healthy balance.
Okay, now that's great to hear. So after the ER, did you end Big Four right on that day, or did you continue on for a while longer?
I continued on for a while longer because one of the things that I noticed was that if I were to just quit, I was likely to take some of these propensities, tendencies, type A personality traits with me. And I love being a type A, but also there are the things that like got me into the hospital. And I had a feeling I would just take all of that into a new place. So my thought to myself was, let me figure out how to solve for this here so that wherever I go and no matter what I do, I'm prepared.
Well, maybe let's lead into Akaloa from there. And just tell us, how did you transition? Did you just start thinking at some point, okay, I don't want to do accounting all day. Or even the thoughts around being a business owner, because being a business owner is so different from what most accountants are used to, just having a job.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I grew up a daughter of an entrepreneur, a business owner. So for me, that seed was always in my belly. I even walked into the Big Four with a real estate book in my bag. So there was always that thought of having another business. I wasn't sure what that business would be, but I personally got my accounting background as the back end of my future business and knowing that, okay, well, then I'll always be able to handle the numbers. So that felt important to me. And then whenever I knew what business I wanted to go to, I'd be ready to handle it.
No, that's awesome. Like part of Dope CFO Certified Advisors is we're always telling CEOs, hey, you need a world-class CFO on your team. But I'm the same way. I'm the CEO of a startup. And it's like, I'm saving a lot of money by not hiring a CFO because I don't need one. Got our audit completed as well. So are there, let's hit before we dive into your new business too, are there common symptoms that other people, because I feel like especially, I don't even know what the percentages are, but if you just looked at Big Four or people that have a big tax practice or lots of different kind of jobs in accounting or even just being an accountant at a big company, what are those common things that we start to notice burnout, or is there a checklist like, maybe I'm burnout and I don't know it?
Yeah. Well, in 2019, the World Health Organization came out with burnout being classified as an occupational phenomenon. Oh. So what that showed is three things: feelings of energetic depletion or exhaustion, increased like cynicism or detachment to your job, and then reduced professional efficacy. So I just think of that as tired, negative, and ineffective. And if you're hitting those three things, that's the main definition. But what I often hear is everyone's like, yeah, isn't that just like Monday? Like everyone feels those three things. So you can go much like more detailed, which I can talk about if that's something you want me to go into, just to help those like everyone who's listening, like get a better feel for what that might look like.
Yeah. And you might not think, I mean, you just described me in 2010, and it really was coming for years before then. I had a 10-year CFO job and I literally just hated it. And I was making a ton of money and I had equity. I was getting We had startups within our company. I was getting salaries from three different places. I was getting paychecks like every 4 days in my account instead of every 2 weeks. And it was just like a career. It was a horrible decision to quit my job and move to Oregon from Oklahoma and turn my back on the oil and gas industry, because I could have made millions and millions more very quickly. But I literally just
hated it. I was drained and I had no energy and my psych level was low. And I don't even think I thought of it as burnout. I was like, I just gotta leave. So are there, and maybe hit some points too. Say you are right now, and by the way, I know a lot of people are in that position because I talk to lots and lots of accountants on the phone and they're telling me like, Andrew, I'm in this corporate job and I hate it and I want out and I want, and that gives me the passion for my business to help someone who hates their job say, look, why don't you, yes, come start your own company, be a CEO, build your own clients and get out of that corporate grind. But some people just can't walk away and quit their job. They might need a year or two or three to transition. They have kids and benefits and all that. So what do you say, tell them to do in the meantime?
Well, once they're aware of it, I think that's the biggest thing. A lot of times we think this is just how it is. Like, I always feel exhausted. I'm always feeling feeling behind the eight ball. I'm always a little sarcastic or negative at my job. And that's sometimes just like the accountant way. But if we're noticing that it's a little bit more, right? There's burnout. And so just one thing to think of is there's a 5-step scale, I guess, of burnout, from anything from eustress of like a new job, I'm excited, to stress of just like the everyday stress, working up to chronic stress, burnout, and then chronic burnout. So when you're at chronic burnout, that's a place where you're feeling really not yourself. You're feeling stuck. You're feeling like really tired. You're feeling like you can't get out of your own way. So once you are aware, which is great. So let's assume in that question that you asked, they are aware. Then what I always like to say is start somewhere. There's something that all of us can do, a small step that we can all take if you're feeling burnt out. I will say like some easy things you could do, even listening to podcasts like this, building awareness is huge. And I say this now the third time I'm saying awareness, yeah, because we need that to really understand that it's not normal that every busy season or at the end of busy season, we're feeling like we're completely like flat out, like we've lost ourselves, we need a couple months to recover. That's not normal. That's not the way it should be. So it's great that you're hearing this now. Little things you could do, like drinking more water, going outside for a walk, planning a vacation day, even if it's a month away. There's little things like that you can do. But the biggest thing I can hear to do is really like take care of yourself, raise your hand, ask for the help that you need. Because so often I heard last week there was in the law industry, we lost a partner to suicide. And so it's really, really, it's out there, it's prevalent, and we need to do something about it. So I say that with the urgency of if you're sitting there listening, don't just assume it's going to go away. Don't just try to solve for it yourself, because if you've been feeling like this for 3 or 5 or 10 busy seasons, it's not going to just get better. You have to do something to make it better.
No, that's all really amazing. And getting that help you need, whether I think a lot of people and me included, you could very easily go through your whole career, just be like, I start a new job, liked it for a while. Now I'm sick of it, stress, burnout, get a new job. And so the solution is, oh, I just need another job, when that's not really the solution. And so luckily in today's age, people like you, you've got options to go get that help you need if you're super, because maybe like, and again, if someone came to you and you could start really exploring options. Also, I was telling you about my younger sister. She was a psychologist and did that for 8 years and then decided she didn't like it. Went back, got her CPA degree, worked for Intuit for 15 years or so. Now her kids are grown, kind of sick of it. And so now she just got a realtor license at age 59. Right. And so there's lots of options and ways you can change your life if you want to, I know. Why don't, before we get to kind of the solutions, talk more about your transition into Akaloa and how that got started and all that. And then we'll talk about, how you can help some of us.
Of course. So for me, I made the transition. It was a slow go. I actually had my big four career as I was building my business. So you can imagine I was busy and I was making sure, as someone who was a big proponent of not burning out, to not fall like victim to it again. So I made sure as I was building my new business, I was doing it slowly but gradually. And as my business got more successful, I started to scale down my hours at the big four, shifting from full-time to part-time, and then positioning my career that I was in a set it and forget it spot at the big four so that I could put all my creative energy into my business.
And then you, so when, what year was it when you actually launched, were full 100% on your company?
My business. So this, I'm in my sixth year of my business, which is amazing. Yeah. So it's really exciting to be fully in it for so long and to see how it's changed in the pandemic and everything like that.
Do you, and by the way, I don't know if you're in a big city or small country, I picture you out by the fire in the mountains, just helping. And that relates to how do you have like group programs or is it more individualized, or how would someone get your help if they wanted to get help?
Yeah. So I work with clients one-on-one. So that's my main bread and butter, but I also work in organizations and I do group programs. I do speaking events. I do keynotes. I do speaker series, and it's all for whichever situation you fall into. It's really to help the stressed and burnt out employee. And it's really helping them get the tools that they need to navigate. So one-on-one, you can go way deeper because it's just, it's just the two of you and you can get right to the crux of it. If you're going more the company approach, it's great because it approaches everyone who might be sitting there in silence suffering, and we can give them tools and things to start with that help them come out of that process.
Now, maybe if you are working with someone, maybe it's described a little bit different, because I think like I've done therapy in the past, like you go into maybe on a Zoom therapy, it's like, I'm going to just tell you all my problems and you're going to tell me, is it more structured? Like you're going to take people through, okay, I want you to start yoga tomorrow. And then what kind of things are in your toolbox that you're going to help somebody? Or is it more like defining goals and what they want to do, or how does it work?
Well, one thing to think about, you mentioned, which I think is good highlighting, is just the difference between coaching and therapy. And I like to think of if like our life is on a line and we're in the center of that, if we're looking back, that's more therapy focused, where we had a situation that we're trying to solve. And then coaching is very forward focused. It is about goal setting, next steps, moving to and through to that next chapter. Of course, there's some complementary things that they both share, but there's different things that they both share. And I have had clients who have a coach and a therapist at the same time, or you do coaching then therapy or vice versa. So that being said, that's good to know. But then what can we do, or how do the programs work? When I'm working with a client, I walk them through a methodology or a process to get them where they are feeling burnt out and helping with burnout recovery, creating work-life balance. And that means creating a strategy and then going into more of the time management, boundary setting, and what this results in, and what a lot of clients, all my clients will see as they graduate, is confidence. So we're seeing once we are in that burnt out place, we start to feel like we're not ourselves, we're not confident anymore, we're not feeling good. And step by step, I walk them through how to get there. So we take acute scenarios of what's going on right now in your job or in your life. And then we start to crack that, like, okay, that sounds like a time management problem. Let's talk through a couple steps that's going to help you bridge that gap.
Now, do you, and I love that coaching versus therapy, because that makes a lot of sense. And then as you, which another thing that might be different from therapy. So therapy, you might go with a therapist and there is no end date. It's like, we just start. Oh, we'll meet every week and it may go on for years. Mm-hmm. Is there kind of a 12-week plan or do you just get started and say, oh, you're a really bad case, you might need 6 months? Or is
it's funny you say that. Well, I work with my clients for a minimum of 6 months, because burnout it took time to get there, and it takes time to get out of it. And if it were just a client that had nothing else going on but to solve for their burnout, you could probably do it faster, but we're doing it in tandem of keeping our careers and staying successful, not sacrificing ourselves in that process and slowly recovering. So it can take time because in some ways we have to slow down, in other ways we have to maintain a pace. So we just need to make sure that we're doing our, you know, the recovery process at the right pace. So we work together for at least 6 months to like rid that burnout. But a lot of my clients fully graduate at that point. Some clients continue on for longer than that.
Now, will some of the things you do also be, I call them the common sense, whether the doctor, the therapist, your coach, things like you mentioned already, drink water, get rest, cut out sugar and alcohol, or all those kind of like, or do yoga or whatever it is, take a walk every day. Is it going to include a lot of that plus whatever else, the details of the, but I'm assuming that's probably, we all need that stuff.
Yeah, I think of it in two ways. There's the tactical things that you're mentioning, drink water, go for a walk, do yoga. But then there's the mindset. And this is where I think we don't go. And this is where we need to go. Because it is one thing. It's really nice to have a trainer or a coach or someone to tell you to say, like, drop and give me 20 pushups or like any of that. By the way, if you hire me, I'm not going to tell you to drop and give me 20 pushups. But what I'm saying is it's nice to have somebody tell us what to do. But what we need to learn is how to do it on our own. And that's what the process is. It's to get them, you know, doing the things that they know make them feel better, that they just don't make time for, but doing so by giving themselves permission, seeing where the mental blocks show up, where they should be going maybe for a Peloton ride in the morning before work, but every morning before work, they either sleep in or they skip it or they decide they should answer emails instead. So we really need to work on the mindset. And when we really get to that, then it unlocks all of the tactics to get there.
Okay. And then it hits all those points. So that's really good. And then different things I was thinking about too, not just adding things. Sometimes it's subtracting. I know for me,
absolutely,
like Instagram or Facebook, you log in there, like it's a catch 22. So for example, like in our group, we have a Facebook group where we share good knowledge. And I tell people, you know, do not jump in there 5 minutes, three times a week just to catch up on knowledge. But as far as scrolling Instagram or Facebook, you can just start feeling depressed, especially Instagram. Yeah. People are saying, oh, everything is so perfect in my life. And it can really make you almost feel worse.
It can. There's studies that say it will make you feel worse. Like anything after 20 minutes, TV, social media, any of that starts to like make us feel worse. So we have to be really mindful of that. Yeah, it's a great point.
And cut that down. So that's great as well. Now, what about helping clients balance their, all they've got professionally, plus they've got, I mean, it is different. Like I just talked to one guy who wants to quit. He's actually got, I don't know, 50 tax clients and a few CFO clients and then a bunch of bookkeeping clients, but his personal life, he had all these kids and two of them are in PhD school and he's like overwhelmed. I mean, part of it's the money, I guess. It's not just the time. It's like, I need dollars and I can't just, like, I'd love to just stop for 2 months and take a sabbatical or a reset. But some of us feel trapped, I guess.
A lot of us, I feel, come to me feeling trapped. And we've created a society where like we need to have all the new shiny objects and that we need to keep up with a status and a lifestyle, which also contributes to that depression on social media because there's always that compare and despair that we need to be really mindful of. But if somebody were to say like, I need a sabbatical, you know, maybe they can't do it today, but if they really started, they knew I need this within the next year, we can work towards saving enough money, getting you in a position that you can set yourself up for some time off. Even getting your mind right between now and then, because here's the thing I know about a sabbatical, it's an extended vacation, but if you don't do the work on like healing yourself in that sabbatical, you're going to go back to work and to be just as resentful on the other side.
It's just going to, yeah, not end good. Let me switch gears a little bit. So we're talking about a unique perspective on women, specifically building successful careers. And you've noted that fewer than 25% of women become firm partners. And so this is in particular to accounting and just general. Mm-hmm. So what I know about the industry is there's fewer CPAs coming in. I feel like more of the newer ones, I think the numbers I saw, there's actually more women coming in. So in my mind, you should expect more women should be partners if that's the way it's going. But yeah, that could be super frustrating. So if I was a woman and saw more men on the partner track, it would make me want to be quicker moving to being CEO of my own company and not waiting around.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at the numbers, yes, there are more women that usually start in the profession. And then what happens is the middle of the career, that can be really a challenge point for a lot of women because they're in that position where they have to decide career or family.
Yeah.
And what's tough in that moment is if they don't raise their hand to get that help, sometimes it could either mean taking a step back in their career and intentionally doing so to support their family, where I have the full belief you can have both. You just need to solve for it different than how you've been solving for it to get to that point. But just as we're seeing as a society, or in at least in the profession, we have more women, that midpoint breaks up a lot of the group. And then those that are left are still trying to balance it all. A lot of the women that are making it past that point are breadwinners in their family. They're the ones that are called when their kids are sick. They're the ones that are also running the million-dollar engagements. So there's just a lot that women still statistically tend to carry. And you can see when they're at that top point, there's only so much time. They still have to make that decision of what I want. So it's not even that men necessarily, I mean, I guess depends who you ask. Some men may be promoting faster, but it also might be because women are taking a break around the time of their family. So men keep moving up quicker. So there's a couple of things at play.
Say you are that woman that's very successful and smart and going up in national accounting or whatever, but maybe single mom and has three kids. Is it actually doable to stay on that track with a balance without burning out, or is it just there's just too much? Or is it?
I could probably make an argument for both, but I truly believe it's possible, right? I see single parent partners, right? I've seen women overcome adversity to get to that place. There is also the question, I know when I was sitting in the seats at the Big Four, looking up saying, is that even what I want at this point in my life? Like, do I want that kind of lifestyle where I'm like always on, like I don't have any downtime? So it can be a challenging point in your career. And what I like to say is when women come to me, like they always come being like, I need to get out of my career. Like I can't do this anymore. And it's not about getting out. It's about taking a step back. All right, a side step to take a breath and figure out what they need for themselves and move from a place of reactive to proactive. Because in that reactive state, it has you quitting, it has you wanting to leave, it has you wanting to throw away and burn down your 10, 15, 20 year career. You don't have to do that, but you can.
It sounds, amazing to me. And it's to be able to do all that. And there has to be a solution because the mathematics, we're all good at math, the numbers, there's so many baby boomers just aging out and retiring altogether and fewer accountants coming in. And there's more industries and more work than ever. And so at some point, there's got to be a solution where people can be found and whatnot. But I still, even last weekend, I was dealing with people at BDO all day Saturday. They were auditing my company and on tax stuff for my wife's dad. I was dealing with RSM. And all these people are still in the office on the weekends. And it's just like, I get it. It's very hard because they have so much work. And then the other thing I'm seeing at the other end, I've talked to some partners that are 60, depending on which firm. I think like Grant Thornton, I think they push you out at 62. Sachs, 60. There's different ages, but they're pushing people out. They've got these rock star accountants that actually like what they do. And their kids now are grown and they're 60. And like me, I'm 60. They want to go 10 more years. And here their firm's like, okay, now we're getting rid of you. So it's there's a lot of nutty stuff. And again, going back now, say you come across somebody. Can you coach them either way? Like one way is, hey, we're just going to figure out how you can stay in Big Four and make your life better. Or maybe you're an entrepreneur and want to go build your own thing and do what you want for yourself. Do you just kind of see who the person is, or how do you?
I think it's a great point you bring, because no matter whether they're coming to me like, I gotta go, or I want to figure this out, or, you know, any other situation where they're coming to me, it's important to first recover from burnout before making any rash moves. I will say majority of the clients come to me thinking they have to get out, but the majority will stay. And the ones that go move really strategically. They're not moving out of desperation. So to your point, I had a client who went from big firm to entrepreneurship, and that's a delicate journey. That's a journey I had gone through. Others who are listening, I'm sure a lot who are listening, right, have gone from like these like corporate-y professions with stable pay to entrepreneurial, where you make your own path. And so you just want to be really gentle in that process too, because for a lot, it can create feelings of unstable. And just, it's important to make sure that no matter what you want to do, you're doing it not from a place of, I got to get out of here, but like, I can do better for myself. And that mindset shift is really significant in forging that path forward.
And that reminded me of someone I just talked to recently that was looking at joining our franchise, and at the end changed his mind, but he came through this process like, yeah, wouldn't say he's totally burnt out yet, but he saw himself going that way, and he just wanted out of corporate. And at the end of the day, he started looking at franchises, and I'm not sure which one, but like, he was going to open up like a food franchise, nothing to do with accounting. But I think it is important to think about when you become the CEO of your own startup, it may not be burnout, but it's very, very intense. And I always think of, because most of us know, when I think of startups, I think of high tech. And back in the day when people were building Google and Facebook, think of Mark Zuckerberg or Elon Musk, or these people building startups, and they were sleeping together at the office and they were there around the clock. But it was less about burnout, and it was more like driving passion. Like, I want to build Google to be the best thing ever. And so they were there literally around the clock because it was more passion driven. And if you find yourself that kind of CEO, you could still be working 70 hours a week, but it's because you love it and you want to build something amazing, as opposed to like, oh, I'm just working because people are giving me more work to do.
I think that's a great point that you bring up, because there can be the same circumstance of, let's say, like working 80 hours a week, right? It could be, you know, minimal sleep and all of that. And our thoughts do create the results, right? If we think, that's the thought, like, I hate this, or this is so much, or this is overwhelming, right? Then we have feelings of dread. And then it's the actions that we take that become the, maybe not sleeping as well, or not eating as well, or not taking care of ourselves. And even though some of those same actions might show up for the 80-hour person who loves their job, like the Mark Zuckerberg, there is a part where your immunity is higher when you have more positive thoughts about your work. If you're like, I love what I do, and I'm solving the world, and I'm changing the world, and I'm doing better and better. But I will say there is a tipping point for all of us that we can't sustainably work 80 hours for the rest of our life. Like, at some point we need to have more care for ourselves, because it does add up. Those are the things we can do in our 20s and our 30s and maybe in our 40s. But there is a point where if we don't sleep enough, if we don't take care of ourselves, if we don't move our body, like, it does start to create dis-ease in our mindset and in our body with like indigestion or little things. But then it can turn into more like disease if we're not actually taking care of ourselves. So I do want to point that out, because I think there's like, there is a mind over matter until, and we have to just be aware of that.
Well, this has been super awesome podcast. Why don't we wrap up with telling people kind of where they can find you and how you work with them? Is it, I'm assuming, Zoom or something? And then we'll put everything in the show notes too, so that it will make it super easy for people to connect with you.
Yeah, thank you so much. So I work with clients for 6 months in a program called Freedom. And there's more information about that on my website, which you can find at acheloawellness.com. That's A-C-H-E-L-O-A, wellness spelled out.com. You can find me on all the things and all the places. I'm on LinkedIn and Instagram most, but you can also find me on YouTube and I don't know. What else am I missing? Wherever. Awesome. I'm there. If you're looking.
And we'll put your in your email. If they go to your website or whatever, they can just email you or whatever. And then you give them program information. No, I'm certain this is going to get a lot of response. And especially right now, we're in the middle of busy season, tax season. And people are, and I talk to sometimes people like, this is the last one, or this is, I'm doing something different. And so it is a good time to be thinking, because yeah, maybe if you are in the middle of that, you can transition and take a freedom. I love your program. It's kind of like a present to yourself. Mm-hmm. Give yourself that present to come see how you can make adjustment and have a better life, because that is the main thing.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much. This was a great conversation, and we will see you from there. And we'll share it on all our social as well. And I look
thank
forward
you so to much. Thanks for
connecting
having me.
More.
Thanks, everybody.
You've been listening to the Dope CFO Cannabis Accounting Podcast. Every other Monday, we air tips and insights on cannabis and CBD hemp accounting. Make sure you subscribe today and also check us out on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, YouTube. We're pretty much everywhere for more advice, tips, industry news as well. To find out more about our cannabis and CBD accounting program, visit dopecfo.com and don't forget to be dope.